It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. Coffee with sexy liberal Carlos El Zerraki coming up in just a bit. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Well, we're obviously having so many conversations about income inequality.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's how Bernie Sanders is resonating and Hillary's been talking about it.
Absolutely.
American Mojo Lost and Found is a new book by Peter D. Kiernan, award-winning author of the New York Times bestseller Becoming China's Bitch.
Love that title.
Love that. Oh, good morning, Peter.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm thrilled to be having you on. This is like the topic of the moment in America.
Well, thank you. I have to say there must be 20 people running for office these days, or close to it, and everyone running for president seems to want to capture the middle class and be their champion.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and it's hard for all of them to agree on that.
But yeah. Here we are. And I love even Republicans talking about it. You're like, wait a minute, what now? What would you do about income inequality? I mean, this book, I love the way, because it's told through individual histories, mm-hmm. right, of how the middle class flourished under unique circumstances following World War II and then up to present times, right?
Yes, I have to say there's a friend of mine on NPR has a line I love, which says, the universe is not comprised of atoms, it's comprised of stories.
Right,
and the story of the middle class is not a demographer's digit or some chart or graph. It's all individuals, and most everybody listening has been or is a member of the middle class. Most of the readers of my book will be middle class.
Mm-hmm.
It's the majority of us, and so it's written with great respect to our majority.
Right. Well, I mean, it is interesting when you talk about, you know, their rise over the course of the 20th century, as well as its currently imperiled state. Talk to us about what that means to you, because a lot of people just say it, but tell us, you know, in your sort of researching all this, you know, crystallize for us why.
Sure. One of the things that's happened, Stephanie, is that for a long time we tended to look at the middle class as kind of a chunk of granite. Here's what they are. And frankly, back in the days of the 50s and 60s, it was essentially a white experience.
Right.
That's changed over time, and today the middle class is much more dynamic. It's become a sort of a mapmaker's nightmare. So it's better to think of it as an atom with a core and then lots of electrons spinning around it with people going in and out of the middle class all the time. And that is where the real trouble lies, that this dynamism is well ahead of our policies to cope with it. And so the middle class is stuck in a real tribulation.
Well, yeah, as you say, 80% of the world's purchasing power, 92% of the world's economic growth, and 95% of the world's consumers are now outside the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
You ask whether Americans are in danger of being left behind, sort of like an economic rapture, and we are being left behind.
Here's the problem. You know, here we sit. We have a colossus of an economy, a $16 trillion thing of majesty, right?
Right.
And the trouble is, we're not creating the kinds of jobs that enable people to live a middle-class life. What I talk about in the book is, inflation for most Americans is moderate. But if you look at the relevant costs, what I call in my book relevant inflation for middle-class life, education and college costs, healthcare costs, housing costs, energy costs, you know, your drug prescriptions, all those have very spiky, huge inflation.
Right.
And yet, at the same time, for the last 30 years, real wages have been flat. And therein is the gap, is the problem that we've got to help our middle class resolve.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the more pertinent question then is how, you know, everybody has an idea, like, what, you know, why are wages stagnant and how do we change that?
With no disrespect to the 20 or so people who are running for the presidency, you know, when people talk about creating jobs, most of them, frankly, have never done it, so they don't know how to do it. But the key is the creation of great breadwinner jobs. And it's very frustrating because right this minute, as we speak, there are 4 million jobs. Oh, they're data processing and information systems jobs. They're digital jobs. There are lots of skill-based jobs, 4 million of them, open and available. These are jobs that don't need to be created. They need to be filled.
Right.
We have a skills gap, and we have to help people get the skills necessary to fill those open jobs.
You know, your book, it appears filled with, you know, these story, like you say, the individual stories that sound fascinating. Every chapter begins the story of a person who participated in some cases played a key part in the progress of the American middle class. Tell us about these. So there was a potato magnate who played a part in made McDonald's possible.
Yes, absolutely.
Tell us that one.
And what it says is that there are people in this country who just are job creators. Steve Jobs was another one. You know, he was a brilliant guy, and he designed cool-looking products. But what
it was even
really
in his
was,
name, Jobs.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's almost like out of Dickens, right? I mean, he is the world's greatest jobs creator. And what we have to do is find a way to harness the energy of some of these people who are one percenters. There are flex factors in our society. Women are a flex factor. 1 percenters are a flex factor. We have to manage them and their abilities and direct them to fill the gaps we have in our middle class. If we don't do that, we're not going to be the kind of country we can be.
Speaking of women, there's a chapter on Betty Friedan and her contribution to unleashing the economic potential of women.
Yeah,
Stephanie, I have to tell you that when you write a book, I know you're doing, and you've got one coming, or it's just been released.
Oh, thank you for bringing that up, Peter. It's out, and it's number one on Amazon. Thank you.
Oh, my God. Well, I'll like yours if you like mine. How's that?
Okay.
Yes,
I do.
We
I like
love
you.
Your book.
But here's the exciting thing about writing a book that you may have discovered is that you learn. And I started doing some research on Betty Friedan and what women have been up to for the last 50 years. And what's extraordinary, and I'm calling it, it's early, but I'm calling it, America has become a matriarchy. Here's why I say that.
Yeah.
Today, 51% of the professional jobs, most of the professional jobs, are held by women. Every minute of every day, a new business gets created in this country by women. Today, there are millions more women in college than men. They are 60% of the graduate students and half of the PhDs. Women are creating jobs and building an opportunity for themselves. Most of the accountants in this country, women. 40% of the associates in law firms, women.
Yeah.
I've never seen a group of people so brilliantly position themselves. And so, it's not a surprise that 40% of the households in this country now, the lead or sole provider is a woman, and we're on a way to majority.
Hmm. Well, Peter, I'm a job creator. I mean, granted, only a couple of jobs. Just this guy and then that guy. But, and that guy over there. Okay, three. but, you know, better than nothing.
It's actually a perfect case in point that the jobs that we're talking about, the 4 million high-skilled jobs we're talking about, are multipliers. If you fill that job, it's a necessity to create 2 or 3 more jobs to support what that job
True.
Does.
Yeah,
right.
And we've lost it. So if we have 4 million of these great jobs, And we have problems, okay? If you think of every single soul in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
every person, and every person in Philadelphia.
And they're all on the 405 right now listening, by the way.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Okay, if they're out there listening, that's how many young people between the ages of 16 and 25 in this country are what I call in my book NEETs, not in education, employment, or training. Mm. They have nothing to do. Can you imagine anything more frustrating and diminishing than being 22 years old with no hope, no job prospects,
yeah.
no education, and nothing to do?
Yeah.
That is a legacy we cannot allow. We have to figure out a way to train those kids. And if you're 22 and you've been out of school for 5 years and you don't read up to grade level and your math isn't up to grade level, saying, well, education is going to solve that young man or woman, they're not going to school with 15-year-olds in high school. That's not going to be the solution. We have to encourage, and my book is written for everybody, whoever you vote for, I don't really care. What I want you to do is force him or her to answer the questions, what are you going to do for the NEETs? What are you going to do to optimize women's impact? Because they are multipliers.
Yeah.
It makes no economic sense to pay women less.
Yeah. Well, Peter, I do care who you vote for. And here's what I want to ask you, because, you know, we're coming up into a presidential election cycle. And, of course, every Republican is citing Ronald Reagan. They're sainted Ronald Reagan. You talk about Reaganomics in the book. That's part of this, right?
Because I sure do. And while I can't pick my favorite Republican, I'm happy to give you my top 10. but I think one of the issues we have to do when we look at what Reagan did, I'll give him both sides, the good and the bad. He was brilliant and brave in crushing runaway inflation and rewriting our economic ship.
Mm-hmm.
However, then he got into a tax scheme
Right.
That essentially created structural redistribution. Now, did he do it on purpose? I'm not going to play psychographer and try and figure out what was driving him. But the facts are the seeds for this 1% disparity that you're seeing right now were planted when you had everyday Americans having to pay a higher tax rate and the wealthy having a much, much lower tax rate.
Yeah.
And what happened is we got in this sine wave of economic ups and downs. And what's happened and has crushed the middle class is, sadly, when we have the economic downs.
Well, I've had my umbrella up, my economic umbrella up since the 80s, and still no trickle down.
There is no trickle down is a fantasy. Okay, there is no connection between the Dow and the cycle of poverty. I've spent my last 30 years, most of my free time, with an organization called Robinhood, which you may not know, in Los Angeles, but it's a poverty fighting organization in New York City. And what we've seen is there is no connectivity unless you make one. Unless you build a bridge between success in the Dow and the well-being of the people, particularly in the middle.
Yep.
They're getting left behind.
Peter, it's fascinating stuff. American Mojo, Lost and Found. There's a link to it up at Stephanie Miller Show Facebook. Mm-hmm. And thanks so much for taking time for us. It sounds terrific. Thank you so much.
I love being with you, and great luck with your book.
Thank you, sir.
You too.
All right. All right. Buy both our books. Buy both our books. All right.